Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 243, Rey Skywalker and Luke Solo. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, my fellow Porg in the Force, we have Carl Eclair.
Yes. Oh, I am so in love with Porgs already. I think we all are. They swooped in and captured every fan's heart.
Right.
Oh, man.
We're just a couple of podcasting porgs here, folks. That's all.
I can't wait to hear what they sound like.
Probably, like, really horrible sounding. Like,
oh, man, I hope not. I hope they're really adorable sounding. They are. Have you seen the sketch? And I think it was in, like, an early release of, like, a kid's book, but there's a porg that sits on R2's head. Which is
an... So you broke up there for a second. What?
I said there's a... There's a picture out there of a porg sitting on R2-D2's dome.
Oh, my goodness. I need to Google this. Hold on.
Well, while you're doing that, and everyone else is thinking about porgs and R2, this episode, we are really excited. We're going to be looking at, especially in light of the new Entertainment Weekly article, looking at the idea of Rey potentially being a Skywalker, or not, and this idea of Luke on his own. Very, very intriguing stuff going on with all this Last Jedi news.
R2 and Porg. I found
it. Did you find it? Yeah. So cute, right?
It's adorable.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Rey, listen to this beautiful theme. Sorry, everybody. We just had to let that blast. Her theme is so amazing.
We're not sorry, though, folks. Yeah,
sorry. Sorry, we're not sorry.
We're not sorry at all. We had to do that.
Rey's theme is so good. And
it is.
You know, it's been on so many of our minds for, you know, 2 years now since Force Awakens came out. Is she a Skywalker? Is she not a Skywalker? So we're going to dive into the discussion about, well, what would it mean if she is? And what would it mean if she's not? Because I think there's... positives in both circumstances. I think there's great potential if she's Rey Skywalker. I think there's great potential if she's Rey Nobody. So rather than just like hating on the idea that she may not be a Skywalker, looking at maybe the potential goodness in that, and then we will talk about which we would prefer personally. And then also looking more at, you know, the state of Luke Skywalker in Last Jedi. Kind of like he's very much the solo character at this point. So we want to dive into that, do some discussion about that. But before we get into anything, we got to give... What did you just say?
Before we get in... I was just repeating you. I'm copying you. Before we get into things, I hadn't said anything in a while, so I felt the need to butt in.
I thought you said something porg. You said before we porg, get into everything.
Oh. I'm going to just slip porg in every other word now, apparently.
Perfectly.
So.
And it's the porg's law. Before we hop into the episode, we would like to give a shout out to the unofficial official Patreon sponsor of this episode of the Wampa's Lair. This goes out to Joe Lopez. Joe, thank you so much for supporting the show over on Patreon, and thanks to your kind contribution, yet another Wampa is safe from dismemberment.
Yes, thank you for joining us on this episode as a fellow porg as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, and just so you know, folks, I'm going to be on vacation this week as you're hearing this. And so we're recording this early, like, so we don't have the matchup for you.
Right.
So the matchup, we're holding off until next episode because we're recording this literally the day after we released our last one. So,
Jason's a traveling man.
Yeah, so we didn't have – there's not enough time for you guys to get all the responses out. We want to give you guys due process to get all your responses and thoughts out on our matchup. So we'll save that for the upcoming week, and you'll hear that on our next episode when I'm back from vacation. So
always on the move.
You know it.
I couldn't wait to get that in there. I love that line. Always on the move.
Always on the move.
And also just a quick update for those of you who do support us on Patreon. Don't forget, if you haven't already, to shoot us a message either in Patreon, email, whatever, with your mailing address so that we can send you out our little thank you mailing gift. It, again, very small, but we do have a little thank you for all of you supporting us on Patreon.
Yes.
A little bit more about that at the end of the show, but let's not waste any time, Jason.
No, we got a lot to talk about.
We got some stuff on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Ray.
Ray.
Ray?
These are the first steps.
I love that. Love that.
I'm so happy that they used Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor.
I know. I really hope Ewan is back as a Force Ghost in this. But I will say, I think the most likely Force Ghost we're going to see is Yoda and then Hayden Christensen Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard anything about Ewan McGregor near the set of this movie, so I'd be really surprised if he shows up.
But hopefully that means that they're holding him in reserve for his Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone movie.
Let's hope so.
We'll cross our fingers and hope that's the case.
Yes. If the porgs are with us, it shall be.
Yes. Yes. I have no idea if that's what the porgs sound like, but that's what I'm imagining they sound like.
Oh, man. So, Jason.
Yes, Carl.
Rey Skywalker, right? I think this is what many of us are still speculating, what many of us really want. I think...
It's kind of what we all initially walked out of the movie theater after seeing The Force Awakens with is... Rey, is she a Skywalker? You know, they kind of were hinting at that heavy-handedly. So.
Right. Right. And, you know, so to me, what I would love about her being a Skywalker, and we can talk a little bit later about whether or not that means she's Luke or potentially Han and Leia's. I don't think it necessarily means she has to be Luke's daughter. But I think... The thing about her being a Skywalker is it continues to tell the story of the Skywalkers, right? If she is a Skywalker, it balances out Kylo too, right? Like Ben Solo falls, yet another fallen Skywalker, right? We're like we're 2 for 4, you know. I mean, we're only at 50, we're only batting 50% here,
right?
So I think it could balance that out. But more than anything, right? Like George has always been very clear that Star Wars is a 6-part story, and now is obviously an expanded story beyond that. But his intention was always that it be a family drama, a family soap opera. He always used the term soap opera, especially in later years. And I think this really adds to that if Rey is a Skywalker, right? She's part of this broken family, and we're going to have to figure out how she fits in here and what is her importance in this family.
Right. And it's... But the big sticking point with that is, well, if she is part of the family, then why was she left on Jakku?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there has to be a good explanation for that, you know. So it's one of those things where, yes, I agree. If she is a Skywalker, it continues the story of the Skywalkers, which they said is still part of this trilogy. You know, there's still a lot of the Skywalker story, this family story going on. And you're right, it does help to balance Kylo out, because then if she isn't a Skywalker, then we just have Luke as the only non-fallen Skywalker, and he's sort of gone off and exiled himself at this point, it seems. So it would be really, I think, hopeful for the fans, for, you know, the story itself, if she was a Skywalker, because then it, you know, this family that has such a huge impact on the galaxy has some more hope for what, you know, it can accomplish and what it can do and how it can influence the galaxy still.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, something I've always loved, obviously, about Star Wars at large is, right, it's mythological stuff. And something very popular in mythology is to tell the story of either an individual or a small group of people or a small family, and how their story essentially reflects the bigger picture, if you will, right? It's like this microcosm of a small story that has macrocosm impact and influence. I mean, that is essentially the entire Pentateuch, the Torah of the Old Testament, the first five books, is essentially about the formation of a family that becomes a nation and everything that happens to each of those individual family members. Like, if you read the book of Genesis as a myth, in that myth, you see how all of these individual characters, what happens to them is essentially a reflection on the nation of Israel in general. And I like that in Star Wars, because both with Luke and with Anakin, their individual story, while it is a very personal, intimate, small scale story, it has these huge ramifications for the galaxy at large. And I think with Rey being a Skywalker, it continues that theme. If she is a Skywalker, her specific story, her personal intimate journey becomes something that is going to be reflected into the galaxy at large. And I think that's important with her as a Skywalker, because she continues to be that lineage. She's in that lineage, that particular family. There's something special about them. The Force has deemed them the chosen family, if you will. And it's through those chosen ones that the Force acts in a very profound way. And it's not to say that it can't act in other ways, but in a very real, profound way, the Skywalkers have this huge mythological import to the story of Star Wars.
Right. Right. And hopefully it becomes something that's a happy story for their family by the end of it. Because right now we're looking a little bit more like Greek tragedy than anything else. I mean, they had this happy moment in the original trilogy. Everything was looking really good at the end of Return of the Jedi. But, you know, the Greeks won the battle at Troy, and then they all returned home, and many of them did not meet good ends.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, I think, you know, I like if Rey is a Skywalker, again, it shows us how the Force works in special ways with certain groups or a certain family, a certain whatever, right?
Right.
I think there's a goodness in the fact that there are chosen ones, that there is something unique about this particular family, this particular lineage, that the Force in a very powerful way acts through them.
There's a calling on them.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And obviously she's received a call of some sort. The lightsaber has called out to her. The Force is trying to reach out to her. She just has to open herself to it. So, you know, there are elements in what we've seen in The Force Awakens that lend themselves to this being a very credible possibility. That lightsaber was owned by Anakin, then passed on to his son Luke by Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now it's found its ways back to the vicinity of those characters with Rey, and she's brought it back to Luke now on Octo, and so we'll see what he does with it, but it doesn't look like he wants it at this point. But, you know, if it's calling out to her, you know, is it calling out to her because she's some sort of virgins in the Force again? Or is it because she's related and it recognizes family? So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I know a certain somebody has opinions about this lightsaber.
That lightsaber. It belongs to me.
Kylo thinks it's his.
That's true. But Kylo, you kind of forfeited that when you decided to go all Sith-eyed. Just saying.
Yeah. So, you know, if Rey is a Skywalker, do you think she's Luke's daughter, or do you think she's Han and Leia's?
Oh, man. That is such a complicated question. Because she definitely looks like she could be related to Han and Leia. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way she looks, the way she does things, the way she's naturally gifted with, you know, the Falcon speaks to a mechanical inclination, which is definitely something Han is. But that's also a Skywalker trait, which could have been passed on from Luke, because Anakin was someone who, you know, could sit in a cockpit and figure it out and take off and do crazy things in it. So, you know, it's you know, I don't know. I mean, I think the idea is that she's probably related to Luke is a better possibility. But then, geez, that just opens up a whole other can of worms, because she was abandoned on Jakku.
Mm-hmm.
She was left there at 7 or something like that. You know, she was dropped off and we'll come back for you. Not, you know.
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of any of our, you know, trilogy of characters, the big three, doing something like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm still of the opinion, I mean, for the longest time, I did think she was Luke's daughter. I'm starting to think stronger if she is a Skywalker, she's probably Han and Leia's. And my guess again, and I'm going to say all this just to say that I'm probably wrong, but let me say it first. I think that she's Han and Leia's kid. She was, you know, Ben's younger sister. When Ben destroys Luke's Jedi Academy, he can't bring himself to kill her, right? We kind of see that in her Force back in Force Awakens, right? There looks like somebody's about to strike her down, and Kylo gets him from behind. And it looks like he's easily a Knights of Ren, like part of the Knights of Ren. Kylo's the one that maroons her, potentially uses a Force mind trick on her to kind of wipe her memory. And then when Luke comes back, he just assumes she's dead, right? And tells Han and Leia that, oh, by the way, not only has Ben fallen and destroyed my, you know, academy, but he killed his sister, right? Like, so that's why, I don't know, like, the way Han seems to respond to her is almost as if he knows her, right? Maz's statement of, like, who's the girl? And we cut away.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm thinking. But the biggest hole in that, there's two things I think that are going to make that problematic. One, that almost seems too obvious, and like it's too easy to put together that they're going to not want it to be that obvious, right? Like they're going to want to throw us through a loop with her, even if she is a Skywalker, like not make it as obvious as we like it would clearly be able to put together now. But also, if you've read Bloodline,
right,
you know, Bloodline is supposed to take place, I think, 7 years before Force Awakens,
and six.
Okay, but either way, not that long either before. Way. And Ben right. and Luke are supposedly still off. Now, granted, things could be happening that maybe Leia just isn't aware of, but I don't know. It seems to... Well, no, definitely not, because she still hasn't told Ben, right? Like, when it comes out in the Senate that she's Darth Vader's daughter, she's thinking, right. Oh my God, now I'm going to have to tell Ben, and he still doesn't know, right? So if that's really the case, it doesn't really match up with the timeline, because Rey was marooned there when she looks to be like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
This is 10 years later in Force Awakens. So
yeah, that's not long enough for her to have been on Jakku.
Right. Now, if like Rey was like a 15-year-old, I could be like, yeah, definitely.
Right.
Right when she's marooned. I mean, if she was quite a little bit older than what we saw on screen, then you could be like, yeah, that's probably definitely what happened.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That is one of the problematic ideas, but you know, there could be other reasons that they would have to explain. But I don't know. It's one of those things where there's a lot of things that say, "Hey, this could be the case."
Yeah.
But then there's enough holes in that it's like, but if that is the case, then why this? You know.
Sure.
And it's like, So it's like, hey, don't know.
Yeah.
But let's talk about if she's a nobody.
Ray Nobody.
Ray Nobody. Ray... So she's related to Odysseus, who called himself Nobody.
Or if she's in Game of Thrones, she's related to Arya Stark. Mm. Who are you? I'm nobody. Anyway. But yeah, so I think one of the strong arguments for Rey being a nobody is we've gotten, you know, Disney has done some interesting themes regarding the Force since Rebels, Force Awakens, now even Rogue One, right? In Rebels, we learn about the Lasat, who have a special connection to the is it the Boga? What do they call what do they call the Force?
I'm sorry, the Lasat, yeah. The Ashla.
The Ashla, that's right. Right. So they have a relationship with the Force. There's a reverence for it. Force Awakens, you know, Maz Kanata is the first character ever in Star Wars who's not a Jedi, who seems to know how the Force works. And then obviously in Rogue One, we have the Guardian of the Wills and Chira especially, right? And the thing is they've taken the Force and made it extremely accessible. As if anyone can in a way tap into it. Maybe not necessarily be a full-on Jedi, but that it's accessible to anyone. So I think Rey being a nobody continues that theme of even a nobody who doesn't come from a special family can have a very strong affinity for the Force.
Right. Right. And I think if I were a betting man, which I'm not, but if I were, I would say the nobody theory is probably a bit more likely. And I kind of like this, and I've said something similar to this before, because then even if she's not a Skywalker, if she is a nobody, but she's got this connection to the Force, she's got this this destiny on her, as she, you know, reaches out and gets trained by Luke and is interacting with Leia and that sort of thing, and her interactions with Han, she could be, you know, in a sense, loosely adopted into the family and become a Skywalker, you know, while not being a blood relative, you know. So if she is a nobody, there's the option, the idea that she could be, you know, somewhat accepted into this family, as, you know, even though she's not related to them in any way. And I think that's something, you know, not only is it broadening the idea of the Force, broadening the idea that all these different people can access it, can impact it, can be used by the Force, but it also continues to broaden the idea of family in Star Wars too. So because we have, you know, a big family, you know, as the, you know, sort of a large family, you know, as the big three. They weren't all related until we found out that Luke and Leia were in Return of the Jedi. And by the time Return of the Jedi ended, you know, they had this big happy group of, you know, Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie, Lando, all them. And it became a more nuclear family later when Leia and Han got married. But it was a large family. They acted like a family. And I think if she is a nobody, being sort of accepted into that family continues to broaden the idea for Star Wars, which I think is a cool idea. So
yeah, that is a cool idea. Something I like too about her maybe being a nobody is the idea of the Force picking a new chosen one in a way. And what I mean by that, for those of you who don't know the Book of Kings from the Old Testament, I think it's the Book of Kings. It might be Chronicles or something. I can never remember exactly where all these events happen. But in the story of the Old Testament, when
I think it's Samuel.
You're right. It's 1 Samuel. Thank you. Kings is later. Good job. Yeah.
We have notes here, so I know what he's talking about.
But in the story, the nation of Israel is asking. They're praying to God for a long time, like, give us a king, appoint us a king. Everybody, all of our neighbors have one. We want a king. So God chooses Saul as their first king. Unfortunately, Saul kind of sucks. Like, he's a very jealous man. He's a very vengeful man. And it doesn't take long for them to be like, wow, this king sucks. And even God is like, wow, yeah, I I thought this person would be good, but no, they're not working out so much. So God picks King David, right? Like, and that's where we get the story of David. So like God switches the chosen one. So how interesting if in Star Wars, the Force, I'm not saying again that the Force is immediate, like is an exact parallel to God, but the Force as the spiritual overseer, it doesn't, right? It picked Anakin. It's been working through the Skywalker family, but now we have Anakin who fell, who was the chosen one. And now we have Ben who's fallen. And it's just, the Force might be like, you know what? It's time to start fresh, right? I'm going to wash my hands and start fresh with a new person who's innocent and pure, like Rey. And Rey becomes, in a way, the new chosen one. And that's whether or not she's born of a virgin like Anakin or something. I don't think that'll probably get unpacked. But I can get behind that idea that the Force has moved on to something different. I think that'll be hard for some of us as Star Wars fans to swallow because the Skywalker story has been the Star Wars story. Right. And these films are called the Skywalker Saga. I mean, that we've been told by Kathleen Kennedy and Bob Iger that this is going to continue the story of the Skywalker family. Right. But that being said, like that would be a cool theme if the Force has a new chosen one outside of that family lineage, but in a way, like you were just talking about, maybe becomes part of it through adoption or friendship or something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do like the idea of your Saul and David analogy, because Saul had a son, you know, he had a son who was supposed to inherit the throne and everything. And God was like, no, that's not who I've anointed. That's not who I've chosen to be the new ruler of Israel. And David is the one. And it takes, you know, a while, trials, tribulations. Saul tries to kill him a couple of times, and God's like, no. But David ends up becoming king in a way that is not, damaging to his reputation or to the calling that God, you know, put on him to become the king. So it in a holy and pure sort of way, he becomes the king. And so the idea that perhaps, you know, the Skywalkers in a sense have run their course and have fulfilled their destiny through Anakin as the chosen one and Luke as the one who helped redeem the chosen one and got the chosen one to bring balance to the Force and then start the idea of the Jedi returning again. You know, maybe their story in this overall tale is starting to wind down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we still have a Skywalker out there in Ben Solo who we don't know what's going to happen to Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, because who knows what devious things Snoke is up to, and it looks like he's going to have some interesting machinations this time around. But, you know, it could be time for someone new to come in, some fresh blood, so to speak, to spice things up, get things, you know, jump started and rev the old engine back up, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because Luke's not trying, it seems,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we'll get into that a little bit more later, but I really do like the idea of, that I was talking about earlier, of the whole, you know, sort of adoption or welcoming into the family in a larger sense. I think that's something that I think could work very well in this situation. So, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah. You know, I can get on board for that. I think, you know, what's definitely clear though, is if Rey is a nobody and they are going to make a 10, 11, 12, Ben's going to have to be redeemed or something. Or, I mean, there's got to be another right. Skywalker around, because you can't continue to call this the Star Skywalker saga if there's no Skywalkers, right?
Right, right.
We know Leia is not going to be around, sadly.
Right.
I could see Luke going out in 9. I don't think Luke will die in 8. I could see him potentially dying in 9.
Perhaps.
But maybe he's the one who sticks around, right? Ben is killed, but Luke Skywalker lives on.
Who knows?
Yeah.
He becomes the new Yoda and lives for 1,000 years.
Right.
Ugh. Yeah. wouldn't want to see Luke at 1,000, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We're 900 years old. You reach. Look as good. You will not. Luke?
Humans don't live as long as Yoda's species, which
no, that's
we
true.
Will never know what that species is.
Mm.
I hope. I don't want to know. But, you know, one other thing I wanted to hit on with the idea of maybe a Rey nobody is, again, just like thematically, you know, in the bigger picture of the story, you know, if you don't like the idea of the Force having like predestined a chosen one or predestined a particular figure, Rey kind of becomes like the every person, right? Like the every woman. Can't say the every man because she's not a man. But she becomes the every person character that
you can say every man as in every human, you know,
that's fair, but she, you know, but she becomes yes, it, right. But she becomes this, like she becomes the, any, the, she emphasizes the fact that anyone can become a hero, right?
Exactly.
You don't need to be predestined by the Force as Anakin Skywalker. And then obviously his children have gifts because they're his children. You know, and in Star Wars, it's clear that there are a lot of heroes outside the Skywalker realm, right? I mean, Han's a hero, Lando's a hero, Obi-Wan's a hero, right? Like, there are plenty non-Skywalker heroes, but the, you know, the monumental heroes of the saga have been Skywalkers, and it's because, in a way, they're predestined. So the idea of Rey as a nobody indicates that the Force, while it certainly chooses people to do certain things, it can choose anyone to do great things. And I think that's a catchy story idea for folks.
Yeah, I agree. The every man, the every person, idea is definitely something that Star Wars likes to rely on. Mm-hmm. Particularly in the original trilogy, prequel trilogy, maybe not quite so much. Because we're telling a very specific story, but particularly with Luke in A New Hope, primarily, you know, he sort of represents, you know, the dreams of all of us. You know, he's sort of that every man, that every person.
Yeah.
And if Rey is a nobody, then she sort of takes that place again. She fills that position, that story responsibility. So. That's definitely a possibility, definitely something that would work if she is Rey nobody.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think about like when the original trilogy came out and up through essentially 1999, there was nothing special about the Skywalkers. It was just their story. In a way.
Right.
I mean, it was the story of Luke primarily. Whenever, you know, George said basically before the prequels came out, whenever George was like, oh, it's the story of Anakin, essentially, like, no, that was not your original story. Like, George, I love George Lucas, but that dude has been very inconsistent over the years.
He keeps having special editions for his statements and his stories as to how he made Star Wars.
Right. But, you know, for that original trilogy crowd, Luke was very much the everyman. He was the every person. Mm-hmm. There was nothing specifically special about him. If anything, right, they go out of the way to show that he's not special. He's a farm boy on a backwards planet. You know, he's not special in any way. I think, you know, George really hit a certain chord by making Anakin, you know, born of a virgin in Phantom Menace and giving us that backstory. It really highlights in a new way the Skywalker family, right? It changes the mythology in a way. It goes mm-hmm. from just being an anybody to something very special. So George himself really changed the mythology by making Anakin born of a virgin. If he hadn't done that and hadn't introduced the idea of the midichlorians and the fact that Anakin was conceived by them, right? If you take that element out of the story, the Skywalkers are just the every person family, right? There's nothing sacred in a way about them. But when George does insert the story of a virgin birth and conceived by midichlorians, whatever that might mean, right, he changes the story quite drastically. And I know for some folks they probably don't like that, and some folks probably love it, and there's probably some who don't care. So
right,
that's the gambit of all the feelings, I believe.
Yes.
But you know, when George did that, now the Skywalker story has a different type of significance, right? Like, the Force uh-huh. chose Anakin and now chooses to continue through Luke. So, right, he really changed the dynamic of this mythology with Phantom Menace. Personally, I liked it. I like that Anakin is kind of this cool, like, sacred figure. And also, for those of you who may not know this, Christianity is not the only religion with a virgin birth story. Buddhists have a virgin birth story for Siddhartha Gautama. Like, whether or not that's actually literal history, we don't know. Just like we don't have literal history that Jesus was born of a virgin. I mean, again, that's something based on belief. But that being said, like, George giving us the virgin birth does not equate to, oh, Anakin's the Jesus figure. No, like, many ancient religions have virgin births for their founders because it implies a sense of sacredness to them.
And a sense of purity.
Yeah.
You know, to them as well. So,
right.
Which, of course, by the end of it, Anakin was not pure.
No. But Luke restores it. Luke's purity restores Anakin's.
That is true.
Which I'll dovetail into this a little bit later in depth, but that's, I like the way you put that, because Anakin's purity gets corrupted. Luke's purity redeems it. Mm-hmm. Looks like in Last Jedi, Luke's purity is very corrupted. He's not Darth Vader, but it has become corrupted. He's become a bit of a tragic, hopeless character. But Rey's wide-eyed purity will reignite his, I think.
Hopefully. I mean, if not, then what's the point of The Last Jedi,
because yeah. Star Wars.
Then we're just all throw our popcorn at the movie screen and be very angry.
Episode 9, An Old Hope. No, or you could call it A New Regret. Anyway, so Rey Skywalker, Rey Nobody. Which one would you prefer? What do you want to see out of the Rey character?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. At this point, I'm just sort of along for the ride, waiting to see what they give me. If I were part of the story process from the get-go, when the sequel trilogy was being conceived and all the details were being worked out, I would have said Rey needs to be some sort of Skywalker. However, coming in at this point after seeing The Force Awakens and what they gave us, I think I would be okay with her being a nobody. It's not my first choice, my initial choice, but at this point, I think it might work a little better with what they gave us. Mm-hmm. I think right now, sitting a couple months, you know, about 4 or 5 months before The Last Jedi, I think her being a nobody seems to fit better. And be something I think I would ever so slightly prefer at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you?
I'm still with Skywalker.
Can't fault you for that.
Yeah. I like that mythological theme of special families doing special things. I'm not 100% opposed to the nobody. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what I think. I mean, the story is going to be what the story is. And, you know,
right.
they didn't ask my opinion.
No. I mean, they should have added the Wampus Lair podcast, the story team.
Yeah. I mean, at least give us a special thanks in the credits for Porg's sake.
I mean, goodness me.
I'm certainly not opposed to her being a nobody. I think it's very clear that she'll in a way become part of the Skywalker family, whether or not it's through blood. Right. I mean, we've already seen, I mean, Han, she already saw as kind of a father figure for the brief time he was in her life. We see Leia embrace her at the end there. Apparently Luke is not going to be very adamant about her presence initially, but we can all predict that that'll change. I don't think Luke's going to be a bitter character throughout the whole movie, or else that would really suck. I think with her being a Skywalker, though, as someone who really loves the mythology aspect of Star Wars, I think it heightens that part of Star Wars a bit more. Because we've always had the Skywalkers kind of at the heart of what's going on. Now, granted, I mean, we're doing all this talk about Rey as if Kylo's not part of the picture too, right? We have no idea what his story is going to do and what he is a Skywalker. I mean, how will that impact the galaxy at large too, right? I mean, his story you know, whenever we, the collective we, Star Wars fans, have this discussion, I think sometimes, I mean, I've done it myself clearly, but we forget about Kylo's presence, you know, what's going to become of Ben Solo. So that's not to say that the Skywalker story is dead and gone, right? Like, Rey doesn't need to be a Skywalker for the Skywalker story to still be told. That's for sure. I just like it because, I think it adds more to the myth of this broken family still having a sense of purity in it, in the person of Rey. I'm going to say this, though. Just my prediction as of right now, 5 months out, is I think she is going to be Rey Nobody, though.
Okay.
But, I mean, time will tell.
Apparently,
according to the Entertainment Weekly article, we will find out who her parents are in episode 8.
Yes.
Which is great. I really thought they were going to drag it out until 9, so I'm really glad that we are getting it.
Right? So that'll be nice. But speaking of Entertainment Weekly, I'm sure none of you knew or noticed that they've started putting out a whole slew of articles for their upcoming issue about The Force Awakens. Anthony Breskin has not been busy at all. He's been sitting on his laurels and doing absolutely nothing for the last several months. I think we should just end the podcast here.
Yeah. Okay. whatever you say, kid.
Right.
That's my best Han Solo impression, by the way.
No, but Entertainment Weekly has been incredibly busy this last couple days. Releasing various articles about The Last Jedi. There's at least, let's see, how many parts is it up to now?
There's six or seven parts
there's at this point.
The Rey and Luke story, the Finn and Rose story, the Porgs and the Caretakers on Ahch-To. There is the Praetorian Guard and Snoke.
Leia and Poe.
Leia and Poe.
Benicio del Toro's DJ.
DJ. And then most recently today was, again, we're recording this earlier than you're hearing it. But today's release was the story specifically about Rey.
Rey and why we'll be finding it. Why it's important that we're finding out about who her parents are.
It talks a lot about how knowing her history will help her form her knowing her past will help form her future. Is a lot of what the article's talking about. So anyway, but yeah, I mean, I think they grabbed us right away with this great article about Luke and Rey, and it's focused a lot on Luke, and you know, Luke. I mean, again,
and folks, real quick, just so you know, we're going to be focusing only on this first part for the rest of our discussion. So, go check out the rest of the articles. Maybe we'll talk it on the podcast at a later point. But right now, we're just focusing on part one with this discussion on Rey and Luke. So,
I should preface with this too before we jump in. If you are someone, and I know there are people out there who want to know nothing about this movie, right? Like, you're avoiding everything but the trailers. So if you're like, I don't want to read that article because I don't want to know the information. Sorry if we've already spoiled some things, but if you don't want any sort of spoilers, I mean, we're just talking what's in the article, so it's not anything beyond that. But if you don't even want to know that, I'd recommend maybe just turning off the show now, because
we're going to get into all of the stuff into this in this article. So we're picking this article apart.
Right. I don't think there's nothing in here, in my opinion, that would be even that spoilery anyway. I mean, everything they give us is very vague starting points without much fleshed out, but just to give you a sense of where it's starting.
Yeah, it's like it gives us a good setting, a good solid idea of where we're starting from, where we're, kicking things off.
Right. And I mean, in the article I read today about Rey, it starts off by saying, we are going to find out who her parents are. Of course, we're not going to spoil that right now. I mean, it's almost like what it said verbatim. It's like, well, yeah, no duh. Of course, you're not going to tell us 5 months before the movie who her parents are, you know. But anyway, so you have been warned. We're going to be talking about this article, and if that constitutes spoilers for you, I recommend not continuing to listen.
This has been your spoiler warning.
Yes.
The Porgs recommend you jump off here if you don't want spoilers.
But, you know, so Luke is a very different character than we left in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Again, it's been 30 years. You know, that makes sense. He's not going to be the same person. But he is so different from, especially, I mean, again, I'm thinking as a longtime Star Wars fan who devoured the EU when I was younger. And I'm sure many of you did as well, right? Like, we all have a preconception of who Luke becomes. And the Luke that we're getting, and it seems, in The Last Jedi is not the Luke that we either believed in from Return of the Jedi or even from the old expanded universe. But we're told that when the movie opens, Luke is very much isolating himself intentionally, and he does not welcome Rey. And he has no intention of getting involved. And that really bummed me out because, again, I know we've talked about this several times on past episodes, but where I've said, you know, to me, I think Luke went there seeking a purpose. He went there, right? He didn't just leave the galaxy to leave for good, but he went seeking answers about what to do to come back. That doesn't seem to be the case. He left for good. That was his intention of, I'm not. And again, it tells us in the article that Luke firmly believes that he's doing the right thing, that he has endangered the galaxy by unleashing Ben/Kylo Ren, and he leaves with regret. I still don't think that jives well with my understanding of who Luke Skywalker is. I mean, it clearly didn't for Mark Hamill. He's very
right. There's a section of the section that really starts delving into Luke starts off with, "This isn't going to be easy for fans. It wasn't easy for Hamill." That's the line that they start the section with. And then it says, "No one wants their favorite hero to be laid low, but it's worth remembering Star Wars always begins with a long time ago, but doesn't end with happily ever after." So,
yeah. But it's, so we're told in this article that the biggest thing that's haunting Luke, so I'm going to just read this directly from, this is from the article. This is coming from Mark Hamill himself. He says, "Luke made a huge mistake in thinking that his nephew was the chosen one, so he invested everything he had in Kylo, much like Obi-Wan did with my character. And he is betrayed, with tragic consequences. Luke feels responsible for that. That's the primary obstacle he has to rejoining the world and his place in the Jedi hierarchy, you know? It's that guilt, that feeling that it's his fault and that he didn't detect the darkness in him until it was too late." So, and I love, there's a line in the article that says, "His dreams are different now, less hopeful, more regretful." Which, again, it makes sense thematically with the sense of like a human life, right? Like, in our younger years, we are very hopeful people. We have these, you know, big aspirations. We have big goals, big hopes. But later in life, as we start to wind down in life, and I remember studying this in one of my psychology classes in undergrad, but something that older people tend to do a lot is look back on life, and they often will have regrets, but also like triumphs. It seems like Luke is at that stage where he's older now, and he just looks back, and the biggest thing that's haunting him is his nephew betraying him and abandoning him. Just a quick side note, I really do think that's important because, right, his name is Ben.
Yeah.
Why would Han and Leia name him Ben? Like, Leia didn't know him. Han thought he was a crazy old wizard. I mean, I'm sure, yes, he's certainly gained a respect for him later in life. But I really think Luke was there at the bedside and suggested it or something like that.
Yeah, you got to know Luke was involved somehow with the naming of Ben.
He was just, because was probably the Force father at his, you know, Porg baptism. No godfathers in Star Wars, only Force fathers.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Whew.
But yeah, I mean, I think, again, we're going to get more of the back. By the way, did you notice in the article? I love this, how Mark Hamill was like, again, there's a lot of backstory here that will be explored probably later on. But he goes, "I needed to know it, so I was grilling Ryan." It's the same Mark Hamill that was shooting in the 70s with George Lucas, right? Grilling George behind the camera, like, "Tell me more about my character so that I can play him better." It sounds like Mark Hamill is continuing that trait with Rian Johnson. Like, "Tell me more. I want to really present him well." But I think, you know, going back to this notion of his closeness to his nephew Ben, is paramount to why he's so dejected in Last Jedi, right? Like, this isn't Kip Duran who turns to the dark side in, you know, one of the old EU novels, like just a random student of his that falls. This is his close nephew. And the words Mark Hamill uses, I don't know if these are going to be in the film or not, but he thought he was the chosen one. I don't know if that's by accident or not on Mark Hamill's part, but he's not just anybody. He really thinks he's the next chosen one. So he invests everything into him. It's also his nephew, who he probably loves dearly. And then this is what happens, right?
Because
you have to ask yourself, why is Luke acting like this? What would break our hero so much that he isolates himself?
Yeah, it's, and obviously there's more to it than just the betrayal and the destruction of the Jedi Order. There's got to be something personal that happened here too between Ben and Luke, you know, some sort of complete and total rejection of some sort. There's got to be something more that there, and the article says there's more to it than we know. There's also more to it than the film will reveal itself. So there's more to this than just the betrayal, but that's definitely the straw that broke the camel's back. That was the final blow that Luke suffered, and it's the most fresh, the most recent, the deepest and most painful of these regrets, these injuries that, so to speak, that sent him to the point where he felt he had to go isolate himself. Because one thing that gives me, you know, a little bit of hope is in the article they say that Luke has come to the conclusion that he's doing the right thing by isolating himself. He's not just depressed and going off to be alone and I don't want to see anybody. No, he's doing this because he believes it's the right thing to do. It's the safest thing to do for everyone. It's the, you know, that sort of thing. He's not doing it out of some sort of depression, although he probably is depressed. Let's be honest. So that gives me, you know, some hope. And this isn't where I wanted to see Luke either, because, you know, me, Return of the Jedi is my favorite movie, and Luke is definitely riding the high after all of this. And, you know, we get the mandate to pass on what you have learned from Yoda. And it looked like things were going to start working out for Luke.
Yeah.
Obviously, they probably did to some degree for a while, but not anymore. And that didn't last. So Luke is definitely a very broken and changed character at this point, because as soon as Rey shows up with his old lightsaber, he's like, nope.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
He rejects her.
Right.
And interesting, it says in the article that really triggers her abandonment issues.
Yeah. Right.
So,
you know, real quick, something I was thinking about in light of what you just brought up, right? The fact that he initially is going to reject Rey. In Star Wars, there's always language of destiny, right? What is your destiny? I mean, we have a new series called Forces of Destiny. And to me, destiny is simply means your purpose. What is your purpose, right? You know, they're always talking about Luke's destiny in Empire, you know, and how the dark side corrupts your destiny because it pulls
you. It is your destiny.
Good. Right, like it what is your purpose? What is the Force's purpose for you? Anakin has a destiny, Luke has a destiny. I think Rey's destiny, specifically in Last Jedi, is to bring Luke back to the world.
Yes.
That's her purpose. You're right. I think it even said something in the article. It might have been from today's article, but something along the lines of how she's not there to specifically become a hero, to become a Jedi. She's there to bring Luke back. That's her first and foremost purpose. But I think there's going to be a big struggle between the two of these characters. I think Rey is going to recognize that her purpose, beyond just her own skills, though, is to bring Luke back.
It'll be a struggle of the wills.
If only there was a Chiritan base to guardian it.
Yes, and the porgs to watch over it.
yeah, you know, but what I think is cool about this story for Luke is, in a way, it continues to keep him in on track for a hero's journey still.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Greg talked a lot about this on two episodes ago, because Greg teaches a class on mythology and uses Joseph Campbell extensively. But the idea of, right, the return. And when you return, you have a boon, essentially something that you've taken out of that experience to gift to the world. I think Luke's return, and I think he will return. He's going to come back. Like, there's no doubt about it. I don't know in what way, shape, or form, but he's going to. He's not going to stay on that island forever.
No.
Rey has changed everything for him. So what is he going to bring back from his experience in exile? I think Luke is going to have something to bring back that he himself is going to be re-enlightened. And he's going to have a new way to respond to the threat of the First Order and to Snoke and to Kylo, right? Luke is going to have some responses to these big threats that he is currently ignoring.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like the whole idea of destiny and this, you know, destiny, the purpose, it's, you know, the will of the Force. It takes on many names. And I think Rey's destiny is to help reignite Luke's destiny. Hmm. Because he's, you know, isolate, like I said, he's isolated himself. He's hidden himself away from the world, from the galaxy at large. His sister, you know, nobody really knows exactly where he is until the end of The Force Awakens. And he's gone to great lengths to keep it that way. And so having this moment here with Rey and Luke, and what it appears we will be getting with, you know, the training sequences and the idea that Rey will reignite something in Luke in order to get him off Octo, will bring him back and help him to re-enter the galaxy in a way that we all hoped he would. So I think hopefully he'll get to the point where we wanted him to be at the end of The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to start there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, what's interesting with Luke, again, I'm going to draw a little bit of a comparison to Dark Knight Rises, which I love that movie. I know a lot of people don't. But and a lot of people don't like it because Bruce Wayne, right? Like, oh, Bruce Wayne would never stop being Batman. Yeah, if you're in a comic book world where you have to sell issues every 2 weeks. But Christopher Nolan is telling a different story, people. Sorry, I love Christopher Nolan's Batman is the best Batman in my book. And I've read a lot of Batman, and I think all Batman is good. Chris Nolan's is the best. And I know a lot of people would disagree with me, but you would, you know, you're welcome to be wrong. Sorry, that's very, very rude. But anyway, you're right. In Dark Knight,
I'm letting Carl dig his own hole here.
Yeah, thanks.
I know he's wrong.
yeah, I know you love Val Kilmer.
No, my favorite is Kevin Conroy, animated Batman. Yeah, just saying.
Yeah, I like him, but until he started crapping on Chris Nolan's Batman, I lost respect for him pretty quick. But anyway, and by the way, he recently read the closing speech of Batman's from Dark Knight, and everybody's like, "Oh, it's so good." It sucks. I'm sorry, but it sucks. Like, he doesn't come close 100%. To the delivery that Christian Bale gives it. Again, my opinion. I know a lot of people love Kevin Conroy, so they loved it, but this is not a Batman podcast, so I'm just going to be quiet. but Kevin Conroy, step off. You're no Christian Bale. Anyway, in Dark Knight Rises, right, Bruce Wayne decides not to be Batman because of the tragic losses he experiences in Dark Knight. And he's struggling with the fact that he doesn't have a purpose. What is his destiny, right? Like, Alfred is down there trying to say, like, you need to find a life beyond this cave and that cowl. Like, you need to find a life beyond this isolation, right? You're more than what you just did in the past. And I think that's kind of where Luke might find himself. What is Luke's purpose, right? Luke did his purpose in the original trilogy. His purpose was to become a Jedi like his father and deal with the Sith. And he does, right? He does it in his own way, right? I think in Empire, right, Yoda and Obi-Wan both are training him to go confront and defeat, probably via combat, the Emperor and Vader, mm-hmm. right? But Luke is enlightened beyond that and does it in a different way. That is the fulfillment of his destiny, his purpose. What is his next destiny then? Clearly, to follow Yoda's mandate of pass on what you've learned. He's doing that, and then that is utterly destroyed. So Luke walks away. And basically, in this article, it talks about how Mark Hamill hints at the fact that Luke is questioning his connection to the Force, right? I mean, it's a crisis of faith, if you will, right? Luke thinks that he might have misinterpreted things. Well, I thought the Force wanted me to invest in Ben this way. Apparently, I was wrong. Apparently, I don't understand the Force, right? Something like that, like this crisis of faith. And I think, again, that's so human, and that's so great about something like Star Wars, which is a very, you know, modern mythical story, that these characters have to be going through relatable things, right? I mean, the experience in life of thinking you're on the right path, you're doing the right thing, and then it blows up in your face. The inevitable result of that often is just like, whoa, I don't understand anything. And in a way, you isolate yourself, right? I mean, you don't go off to a planet on a little island because that's not physically possible. But in a way, you, in small ways, kind of isolate yourself because you feel like you screwed up. And a lot of times, you have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, well, what is my purpose? I think in some way, Luke chooses Octu for a reason, right? He doesn't just go to some random distant planet. He goes to a place that clearly is alive with the Force, just like Dagobah was. It would have been cool if he went back to Dagobah, but he probably didn't like the swamp like you, Jason. Uh-huh. But he chooses Octu. I think that's intentional. I think he is, as much as he feels like he's screwed up and he doesn't quite get it anymore, I think this is his opportunity to say, like, I'm going to go back to its basis existence, right? They discuss that in the article about how Octu, the caretakers, right? Like, this is this mythological place. It's very primeval. Like, the Force is just very strong there. I think Luke's hope there is to rediscover a destiny in the midst of his regret. But he's clearly struggling with that, right? Rey is the response, I think, again, to what he might be seeking. But I think that makes sense that he's isolated himself like this. And I don't really love it. I don't think any of us probably do. But heroes can be broken. And that's exactly what he's experienced. In a very deep, fundamental way, he's lost his purpose. So his conclusion is, well, if I stick around, I'm just going to do more harm than good. So see ya. Right, and this is something that's been on the drawing board for a while. I mean, back, you know, in early Force Awakens speculation and spoilers, like, Luke wasn't going to be around much because he did something, right? Like, everybody thought he did some huge Force power thing that causes massive destruction, right? Like, maybe he accidentally, like, destroys an entire planet with his mind or something, right? And he feels so guilty that he goes away. But it's not quite that dramatic, but I think he sees it as, I've unleashed Kylo Ren on the galaxy, and he was my beloved Force son. So,
yeah,
not godson.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely something that I'm glad we got this now. I'm glad we have this article now telling us, hey, just so you know.
Yeah. Almost smart Luke's marketing.
Yeah. Luke's not going to be, you know, all hunky-dory. He's not going to be the person you want him to be. Because if I had gotten this in the movie theater watching The Last Jedi for the first time, I don't know how I would have reacted. Mm-hmm. I probably would have gone along with the movie and then see how it played out, but I probably wouldn't have liked that part of it very much. Because it's just something that, because I have such a nostalgic and rose-tinted glasses appreciation and love for Return of the Jedi, and the way that Luke, you know, steps into who he is and his identity there, and, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum on this show, and seeing where he was and what he could have been doing and what he could have done after Return of the Jedi, finding out that, that didn't necessarily happen, and that he's fallen in a sense into this broken man, this old regretful warrior in a sense, who would rather isolate himself than fight anymore, which is a classic, you know, storytelling idea. You know, the usually the hero goes and finds this person. They have to try and convince them to get back involved in order to learn something or have them help win the day. It's just interesting that we had our previous hero be the one to turn into that character.
Sure.
Because it didn't that, at the end of Return of the Jedi, which is, of course, there's a 30-year gap here. It didn't look like that was going to be the case. So, but I'm glad they told us now, because now I have the time to sort of digest that, to come to grips with the fact that that's where we're starting here. And so I can be prepared and ready and willing to just get, say, okay, when I see that in theaters. So,
right.
Yeah. And obviously it depends also on how they do things. To see if that really will ultimately work for me. But at least I'm more open to this idea, more willing to give this idea a chance than I might have been had I not known about this going into the movie.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking right now about, right, like comparing Luke to old Ben in A New Hope. There's some similarities between their characters, right? Like, yes, Ben is in a very hopeful place. Like, he's there watching over Luke, the New Hope. And that's where he's putting all of his hope, because he's written off Anakin, right? Right. Like the big thing from Rebels this past season that everybody was like going crazy about, like when, you know, he refers to Luke as the chosen one, you know, in his mind, he is the new one because Anakin screwed up. And even in the original trilogy, whenever he's, you know, in Return of the Jedi, he is more machine now than man twisted and evil, right? Like, he has written Anakin off. You know, he is right. So regretful of what happened to Anakin that he's done with it. And I wonder if, in a way, that's how Luke is with Kylo, right? Like, granted, the difference is Ben is hopeful enough to wait for a new savior in a way, whereas Luke just seems to be done with it. And I'm hoping we get – I mean, again, that's going to get more fleshed out. But I think there is some similarities in the fact that in the same way that Obi-Wan once thought that Anakin was the chosen one and he falls and he just walks away from that, right? He doesn't go confront Vader at any point earlier and try to turn him back. No, he doesn't do that at all. He moves on and lets that lie. And in a way, that's kind of what Luke is doing with Ben. He sees Ben now only as Kylo Ren, you know, twisted and evil, right? For all we know. So, yeah.
Yeah. I like that idea. Because then it connects it. It really does tend to connect it. Because the benefit that Obi-Wan had is while he's, you know, completely, you know, like you said, essentially written off Anakin, he has Luke as a hope.
Yeah.
Whereas Luke didn't have anybody after Kylo. And I like that connection you made, because Luke does seem, you know, at this point, from what we can tell, to view Kylo in a very similar sense that Obi-Wan viewed Anakin. That makes a lot of sense, and helps to connect things and make things a little bit more palatable, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I really appreciate your take there, though, that this is very smart marketing, right? They mm-hmm. knew how much this was going to bother fans, because Mark Hamill's a great voice for the fan community. He's very much a fan of Star Wars himself, which is great. And I think his own response to it, right, of like, whoa, what are you doing here? Immediately resonates probably with the filmmakers and the producers of like, wait. Yeah, this is going to cause an uproar. Let's be open about this now, about where he's at. So again, like, very smart marketing. I don't think it's not marketing that's trying to apologize for anything, but just give you a heads up, like, just a heads up. I mean, and I love how they say it. Like, Ray goes there probably with the same expectations we have. and she's disappointed. Right. And we're going to probably be, in a way, disappointed. But I think it makes for a more compelling story. And I really do believe that because, like, again, I'm still of the opinion that you don't need episode 7, 8, 9, right? It's very clear that George Lucas wrapped up his story in Return of the Jedi. You do not need anything else, at least not on a big galactic scale, right? Like, yes, you could have small novels about, like, the minor conflicts after, but you don't need this huge mythological tale necessarily to continue. But if you're going to, you've got to really up the stakes and make it worth telling. And I think that's what they're doing here with Luke. If Luke's just the same old hero of old, like, I don't know, like, you, Rey becomes superfluous. The story becomes superfluous. You know, you need new stakes. You need more drama. And I think that's really what they're hitting us with Luke's character.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's, you can't rehash the same old story. You can't have the same characters doing the same thing again. So you have to give them new stakes, new challenges, new opportunities to rise again, in a sense. And I like how you put it, that Luke has a chance to, you know, maybe have his own hero's journey again, or his own realization of identity.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I'm not particularly a fan that Luke isn't where I wanted him to be. But I'm starting to become okay with what it looks like we're going to be getting.
Sure.
So, I think this is my prequel moment. Okay. For fans, in the sense that many people had a hard time with the prequels because it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think this is my sticking point because of how much that scene, those couple scenes at the end of Return of the Jedi, mean to me as to who Luke is as a character. You know, I'm a Jedi like my father before me. You failed, Your Highness. You know, that those sort of things. This is a statement of identity, and it just sucks when you see someone who was so firm in who they were, who knew who they were, and you see them many years later and they've lost it.
Yeah,
it just sucks. It's not what I wanted, because I wanted Luke to be the big, you know, BA Jedi who knew everything and could do anything, but it's not what we're going to get. And I think it's going to be something that I'm going to have to learn to be okay with. And I think I'm starting to. Mm-hmm. But this is my moment where I'm like, no, that's not how it was supposed to go.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's my prequel moment.
Sure. That's a great analogy. Yeah, that's a great comparison, Jason.
So And I feel like many people are going to have that. And I hope that they take care of that story in such a way to say, hey, yeah, this does suck for the character, but hey, don't worry. He's still okay, and we'll still see Luke again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we are going to see Luke do at least one thing badass. I really do. And not just for fan service, but I think he is a powerful dude. And I don't know that we're going to see him with a lightsaber, to be honest. I have a feeling his green lightsaber might be gone. I hope not, but because I love that lightsaber. But yeah, I think, I don't know, Luke is just at a very different place than all of us were expecting and a lot of us were hoping. You know, I mean, if the story is going to continue, you can't have a perfected hero at the start of anything.
Right.
No, look at episode 4. Ben Kenobi's not perfect. He's got a lot of growth still. Look at episode 1. Qui-Gon's not perfect. Like, they have a wisdom to them. But, like, Luke is... It's also a reminder that our heroes are human, right? And they can fall. Right, like, fall, not like, I don't think in any way, shape, or form Luke is on the dark side or he's going to the dark side. That's not going to happen. I'd be shocked if it did. But he's fallen from grace. not to become a villain, but he's fallen from his purity, right? To continue to like use that, his hopefulness, his optimism has just been clawed out of him over years of regret. But I also don't think that's how Luke's story is going to end for us. Right?
Right.
Like he's going to come back. He's going to be transformed and he's going to be re-enlightened in a way, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting though, that with what we're getting with Luke here, that one of the strongest people in Star Wars is now his sister.
Yeah.
With all the stuff that she's gone through. I mean, even in Bloodline, when, you know, her entire reputation is shattered and it's revealed to the world that, you know, she's Darth Vader's daughter and all this stuff goes down, she maybe, you know, goes and has, you know, has a pity party for maybe a couple days, a week at most.
Right.
And then she's back in the game trying to solve a problem, you know.
Yeah, it's a good point. She's tougher than Luke.
She's tougher than anybody in the entire galaxy. She's tougher than Vader.
Yeah. Well, that's for sure.
So, so I'm really curious to see what'll happen when Luke and Leia meet back up. See if she just says good to see you again, or if she smacks him and says,
"Thanks for nothing."
But yeah, glad you're back. Why'd you leave me? So. Oh man. All right. Anything else that we want to talk about Luke here?
No, we talked a lot longer than I thought we were going to, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, so you know, these are just some of our initial thoughts, especially in light of this Entertainment Weekly magazine. So the day we are actually releasing this, the magazine comes out on the newsstands tomorrow, Friday, August the 18th. So definitely grab a copy. They're going to be doing it in a couple of waves. So there'll be different covers. I want the loot cover. That's the only one I want. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a collector. I'm not going to buy the same magazine multiple times. I know people who do that because they want all the different covers. I don't care. It'll just go on a shelf somewhere anyway. So, but I do want the loot cover and I really want to read all of the articles, sit down and really read them. But yeah, we wanted to have this, and also just especially about Rey too, right? Like, just that's a discussion we've been wanting to have for a while. Is, you know, what is the goodness of her as a Skywalker? What's the goodness of her not as a Skywalker? Because I think both can be great scenarios. It's just how it's executed, and I'm pretty confident it'll be well executed.
Yeah, I agree.
As much as I love J.J. Abrams, and I still do, I don't really know Rian Johnson that much. There's just something about him where I trust him more than I do J.J. Abrams.
Right.
So
right. Yeah, no, he seems to have, you know, a good head on his shoulders with what's going on.
Yeah.
So I
mean, in a similar way, JJ is similar to George Lucas in the way that maybe Rian Johnson is to Irvin Kershner. And I mean that by JJ has great vision and is really good at giving us great visuals. George has great vision, gives us great visuals. Not as great about writing really good character stuff. Irvin Kershner had a great way of giving us very personable characters in Empire, which, by the way, Empire is the least involved George was in any of the Star Wars movies.
Right.
And then you know, again, just my feeling about Rian Johnson is those are the types of stories he's very good at telling as well. So time will tell. A few more months.
And then we'll be sitting down watching The Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 8. That's exciting.
I know. Yeah, so...
I think that's about it. Oh,
yeah.
We should probably remind everybody what our matchup is.
Yes. Also, too, before that, just a quick reminder about Patreon. We are sitting right now at, I think we have 21 patrons and we're at $108. If we can get up to $120, I will start releasing monthly episodes of Skywalker Tales, which again is this, it'll be a mini segment once a month where I compare a scene from Star Wars to some sort of biblical narrative and unpack that and how those influence us. So if that's something you're interested in, and you want to help us reach that goal, we're only $12 away. So,
there you go.
So yeah, that is an option, but
We have a matchup, yes. So we want to remind you of that so that you can be ready to respond and be thinking about who you think would win. And that matchup is going to be Kylo Ren versus Kanan and Ezra. So I think this is a cool matchup, and I think definitely that's a more even matchup than either one of Kylo or Kanan or Ezra versus Kylo, because obviously that would be a bloodbath.
yeah.
Get the two of them together. Yeah. Now we're a bit more even. So
right.
So yeah, be thinking about that. And Carl, if they want to respond to the matchup or any of the stuff that we talked about in this episode, where can they do that?
You can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter at WampasLair. You can always send us an email with your comments at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com. And as I said, if you want to help support the show on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/WampasLairPodcast. Check out all the great new episode options if you are a supporter. And like I said, those of you who are, thank you. And make sure we have your address so we can mail you a little thank you package. It's not really a package. I shouldn't say that because it's overselling it. But it's a little something.
A little something to say we appreciate you.
Yes.
All right. Anything else?
This porg's all done.
Okay, well, this porg is going to wrap us up. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 243, Rey Skywalker and Luke Solo. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time with all the porgs here in the Wampus Lair. Thank you.